Inheritance.
The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with the American Legion, presents a story out of that great composite of visions, struggles, and victories of the American past, our inheritance. Yes, we Americans are heirs to a vast fortune, a fortune compounded of many things. Of pilgrims building a settlement at New Plymouth. The Battle of Bunker Hill. The voice of a great bell proclaiming liberty. It is the pioneer pushing ever westward. And fast clipper ships of the East India trade. Let us now go back to a decisive period in America's history, one which we all share in our inheritance. Throughout our history, there have been those in all walks of life who have added to our country's greatness by the inheritance they left for us. An inheritance of knowledge and foresight which has added much to our sciences, industries, and territorial expansion. It is in this latter field that we find the names of two men whose foresight, in the face of national criticism, gave America its greatest bargain. The two men, Robert Livingston and James Monroe. The bargain, the Louisiana Purchase. At the turn of the 19th century, the land which comprised the Louisiana Territory was under the control of the French. But American shipping was guaranteed freedom of navigation along the Mississippi River and the privilege of deposit in the port of New Orleans through a treaty which had been made with Spain in 1794. But in October 1802, when France signed a secret agreement with Spain which closed the entire Mississippi River to American navigation, the voice of America grew loud in protest.
It's just plain cussedness, that's what it is. If we can't get our produce down to New Orleans, how they expect us to get it to other parts of the country?
Can't rightly say, Jed. Towed up by land on our backs, I reckon.
More potatoes, Jed.
No. Far as I can see, our crops are just going to rot on the ground, less than somebody figures out something. And real quick.
Well, what can anybody do? If we was to load our stuff in wagons and tow it that way, it'd rot just as quick.
With France and Spain in cahoots and both of them grabbing all the land they can lay their hands on... Well, all I have to say is, what's happened to this here independence we just got through fighting for?
Appears to me old Bonaparte sort of put the lid on it.
Appears to me that Bonaparte is getting a mite too big for his knee britches.
You haven't hardly touched your plate, Jed.
I ain't hungry. Something's sure got to be done to stop him.
Well, what can we do?
We can't do nothing, Jonathan, that's certain. But by jiggers, the Congress ought to be able to do something.
And if they can't, I reckon President Jefferson can.
Tom Jefferson's a good man. He's seen the evils of the alien and sedition laws quick enough. And if he can tromp on laws like that to help folks, sure as shooting he can pass another one for the same reason.
Even if it means war with France?
Even if it means war with France.
I don't know why I trouble to cook the victuals if you aren't going to eat them, Jed.
Just you rest easy, Cora. If we don't get to ship our produce down to New Orleans, pretty soon you'll be cooking more victuals than you know what to do with. Tom Jefferson better think of something, and mighty fast.
Back in Washington, Thomas Jefferson had thought of something, despite the feelings of such men as James Monroe and James Madison.
But the people do not want war with France, Madison. No more than I do.
How is it to be averted, Mr. President? Every day we hear more of the people's resentment. And with shipping almost at a standstill, one can hardly blame them.
I understand their resentment.
Today, Bonaparte controls the entire Louisiana Territory, the whole length of the Mississippi. Now, tomorrow, who can tell how many more will be under his domination? I tell you, Bonaparte is set on conquering the entire world.
Madison is right. With Bonaparte's troops in the West Indies headquartered on Santo Domingo, the arms of the octopus threaten to encircle all America.
Perhaps. But you forget, Monroe, that the effectiveness of Santo Domingo has been weakened by the revolt of the natives under Toussaint Louverture.
And what of Napoleon's General Leclerc? Have you forgotten that he has crushed the revolt?
Whether or not the revolt on Santo Domingo has been crushed is not the main issue at the moment. There is on the globe one single spot, the possessor of which is our natural and habitual enemy.
New Orleans?
It is New Orleans, through which the produce of 3/8 of our territory must pass to market. And France, placing herself in that door, assumes the attitude of defiance.
Yes, and in her defiance, she has completely paralyzed our shipping.
So it is now our duty to unparalyze it.
And by what better means than a declaration of war?
There's another way.
If there is, it does not come to my mind.
We must have an open port for shipping. To that you will agree.
Yes, of course.
Very well. Robert Livingston is now in Paris as our ambassador to France. He's a man of perspective, and he's shrewd. If he were to effect the purchase of the port of New Orleans, and Bonaparte were made to realize that we sought no other claims on the Louisiana Territory, then his desire for an American holding would be satisfied, and there'd be no need for a war with France.
Well, the plan is a good one, but Bonaparte would never agree to such a transaction. He's too mad for power, and you cannot reason with a madman.
But supposing he did agree to give us New Orleans, what then?
Here's my plan. Oh, Monroe, do you consider yourself an able seaman?
Yes, I do.
Good.
Well, why do you ask?
I am commissioning you as envoy extraordinary to France for the purpose of aiding Livingston in the purchase of New Orleans.
You are so certain of success?
I am so certain that I have already written Livingston of my plan.
That should answer your question, Monroe.
It does indeed. What are my instructions?
Look at this map. Here is the Mississippi,
mm-hmm.
with France's territory to the west, and ours to the east, running as far south as Georgia.
Yes.
Now, if New Orleans, the Floridas were ours, that would give us the entire east bank of the Mississippi.
And the Gulf Coast to the eastward.
Exactly. Now, this is my suggestion. When you speak with Bonaparte, proceed with caution. Give him not a suspicion of an idea that we are anxious to purchase New Orleans.
And the price for this port, which means so little to us.
You and Livingston are to offer Bonaparte anything up to 50 million francs for New Orleans and the Floridas.
50 million francs? Why, that's over $9 million.
It is, Madison. And worth the spending.
What if Bonaparte refuses to give up both New Orleans and the Floridas?
Then you will offer 3/4 of the sum for New Orleans alone, or for some portion on the east bank of the Mississippi to be used as an American port. Failing in that effort, you must press for a perpetual guarantee for the rights of navigation and deposit on the Mississippi.
And should the consul refuse to negotiate at all, what then?
If Monroe and Livingston are refused on every count, then they will open a confidential communication with ministers of the British government, with a view to a candid understanding and a closer connection with Great Britain. In the event such a treaty is consummated with Great Britain, it's not unreasonable to suppose that we shall sign a mutual agreement not to make a separate peace with France.
As soon as Congress had voted an appropriation for the purchase of New Orleans, James Monroe set sail for France. In the meantime, having received his instructions from President Jefferson, Robert Livingston in Paris had already started negotiations with Bonaparte through his Grand Chamberlain, Talleyrand.
Do you not find our flower gardens charming, Monsieur Livingston?
Indeed I do, Monsieur Talleyrand. Such beauty. Beggar's description.
There is beauty everywhere, mon ami, when one is surrounded by the springtime. There is something in the air at this time of year which drives away all thoughts of difficulties and indecisions. Don't you agree?
Well, I fear I am not as romantic as you are, Monsieur Talleyrand, nor am I as complete a student of nature.
Comment?
To me, the springtime means only the return of sneezes and head colds.
You Americans, how logical and unromantic you are.
Oh, on the contrary, we're basically a most romantic people. But there are times when romance must surrender to that which is of greater importance.
Oh, c'est impossible, Monsieur Livingston. There is nothing more important than romance.
The growth of one's country is more important.
And can you speak of such serious matters when love is in the air?
Even then, I can speak of the matter which has brought me here today.
Can it not wait for another day?
No, Monsieur Talleyrand. It cannot.
Très bien. Let us sit here and talk.
Thank you. It is of my country I wish to speak.
Oui.
America is out of its swaddling clothes, Monsieur Talleyrand, and sadly in need of territory in which to grow.
You have such a territory in mind?
Yes, though what we seek is of small material value.
Oui?
New Orleans, for example.
Oh, New Orleans.
Just what is it exactly? An unimportant city set in the wilderness. A small town built of wood inhabited by a mere 7,000 souls. Well,
not worth the notice.
Exactly. Huh? And the Floridas. Barren sand and sunken marshes.
C'est triste. You paint a dismal picture, Monsieur Livingstone. Yet this is the territory in which your country, as you say, wishes to go.
Well, when you consider the vast reaches of France's holdings in our country, how insignificant indeed must seem this poor land which we would purchase from you.
Oh, I agree. It is but a trifle.
Then the council will consider our request for New Orleans and the land of the Floridas?
No, Monsieur Livingstone.
But, monsieur, you agree.
Such land is but a trifle, oui. Unfortunately, the consul is a connoisseur of trifles.
Would he perhaps consider the sale of New Orleans alone?
That also is improbable.
I am prepared to offer him a sizable sum.
Monsieur Livingstone, I have not yet shown you our rose garden. It's a charming sight in springtime.
Another time, perhaps, Monsieur Talleyrand. At the moment, I seem to have lost my appreciation for roses and springtime.
On James Monroe's arrival in France, Robert Livingston told him of his talks with Talleyrand and of Bonaparte's refusal to consider the sale of either New Orleans or the Floridas. As the days passed, it became only too evident to the two Americans that the French consul was determined to hold on to the southern approaches to the Mississippi, even if it meant the complete paralysis of American shipping. Though their mission appeared to be a completely lost cause, Monroe and Livingston refused to be discouraged.
4 million francs we have offered Bonaparte for New Orleans alone, and still he refuses to consider. We cannot offer him much more. Yet I will not return home without one more attempt.
Well, I too would venture one more attempt. But Talleyrand, there's no reasoning with a man. You've seen for yourself the way he smiles in that cunning way of his and lets us play the fool. Oh, he's a fox, that one.
I know. But even a fox can be outwitted.
How do you mean?
Despite Jefferson's caution, we have appeared much too anxious in our arguments with Talleyrand, too eager to seal the bargain. In the future, let us proceed more cautiously, even with assumed air of complete indifference.
Yes. Yes, I see what you mean. If, after trying so desperately to purchase New Orleans, we should suddenly show no interest whatsoever in it.
Exactly. Now, tonight, Bonaparte is giving a ball. We will attend. We will be casual. We will enjoy ourselves. But we will make no references to New Orleans or the Floridas.
I fear the ball will hold little enjoyment for me.
Is it so difficult for you to forget our dealings with Talleyrand?
No, that is not the reason.
Well, then what other reason could there be?
I cannot dance.
Eh bien, Talleyrand, our guests, they enjoy themselves, oui?
When the consul invites them to attend a ball, sire, they always enjoy themselves.
Do you perhaps suggest, Chamberlain, that they enjoy themselves only to flatter us?
I fear there are many at court who do not admire you for your largesse, your generosity.
We agree. But still, it amuses us to be surrounded with music and dancing.
Huh? What is it?
Regardez. Our two ambassadors from America.
Oui, and even they seem to be enjoying themselves.
To win favor from us?
No, it is more than favor they would have from Napoleon Bonaparte.
Good evening, Your Majesty.
Monsieur Livingstone and Monsieur Monroe.
Your Majesty.
We are pleased to see you.
Thank you. Good evening, Monsieur Talleyrand.
Monsieur.
The dancing, it pleases you?
Oh, I fear your minuet is far too intricate for my poor comprehension. But Monsieur Monroe would surprise you with his grace and lightness of foot.
Oh, have done with such compliments, Livingston, lest the consul detain me here as dancing master.
Oh, do you then find our country so unbearable, Monsieur Monroe?
Oh, contraire, your majesty. I find France most attractive. There is so much to amuse and entertain a foreigner. And with beauty on every side, there is little more for which one could ask.
You pay us a most charming compliment, Monsieur Monroe.
Thank you, Your Majesty. Oh, Monsieur Talleyrand.
Oui, Monsieur Monroe.
Would you perhaps one day show me the consul's rose garden?
The rose garden?
I have told Monsieur Monroe how proud both the consul and you are of the roses. I, too, should like to see them. I fear I have been much too occupied with other problems to enjoy the real beauty of your country.
I would be most happy to show you the gardens.
Shall we say tomorrow?
If it is your pleasure.
Good. Until then, au revoir, Your Majesty.
Monsieur Livingstone.
Good evening, Your Majesty.
Monsieur Monroe. Eh bien, Talleyrand, what do you think?
What do I think?
The ambassadors from America. They are most anxious to purchase for their government the port of New Orleans. Then, voilà, they suddenly speak only of the charm and beauty of our country and of the desire to see our roses. This does not seem strange.
Strange? No. It seems only to me that they have at last realized that France has no desire to surrender her claim to the port of New Orleans or the Florida.
That was our feeling, Monsieur Talleyrand. But we have come to a new decision.
You mean you will give the American government control of New Orleans?
We have been considering the state of our affairs in America. Consider Talleyrand. In the West Indies, General Leclerc has crushed the revolt of Toussaint Louverture. But the people have had a taste of freedom. So, they will attempt another revolt. And another. Until Santo Domingo is no longer ours to command. If Santo Domingo is lost, our gateway to America is also lost, n'est-ce pas? Without Santo Domingo, our lands in America become powder kegs. On the other hand, our relations with England give us much concern. And if the American government should declare war on us, the English would join them immediately.
Oui, even now the forces of George III wait for the chance to declare war on France.
When they do, it will take a great deal of money for us to oppose them. If war is declared and the British ships attack New Orleans, we shall lose it without so much as a centime of recompense.
But, if the American government should purchase New Orleans now, and it is later attacked by the British...
Voilà. We have lost nothing. Our treasury has grown fat, and it is the Americans who lose New Orleans to the British.
A most excellent plan.
This masquerade of the American ambassadors... It does not deceive me. They still remain anxious to secure New Orleans for their government. And they will pay any price to get it.
Eh bien, then tomorrow when I show them the garden...
Tomorrow when you show them the gardens, you will present them with a most attractive offer. One which they cannot refuse. And one which will give us the money to finance our war with George III.
Dear messieurs, are the roses which you wish to see. The realization perhaps does not equal the anticipation.
Oh, indeed it does, Monsieur Talleyrand. The roses are magnificent. Such colors, such fragrance.
Would that we could grow such blooms in America.
Oh, you cannot grow roses in your country.
Huh? Oh, roses, yes, but none which can compare with these. I count the days until my return home when I can speak to my friends of such beautiful flowers.
Oh, do you then leave us so soon, Monsieur Monroe?
I'm afraid I must. There are matters of importance at home which require my attention.
Oh, quel dommage.
I shall indeed be sorry to leave your country, Monsieur Talleyrand. This has been a most interesting visit.
We shall be very sorry to see you leave.
Thank you. Perhaps one day you will pay us a visit in America.
Okay. Monsieur Monroe.
Yes?
Un moment.
Something is wrong.
No, Monsieur Livingston. No. It is only that I would speak with you.
As you wish.
We have spoken together many times recently, the three of us, n'est-ce pas?
Indeed, we have.
Many times.
And the purpose for your visit to France, Monsieur Monroe, it has brought you nothing.
Oh, if you refer to our government's desire to purchase New Orleans...
Precisely.
You need have no qualms on that subject, Monsieur Talleyrand. We understand the situation perfectly, and we shall pursue it no further.
Monroe is correct. If the consul has a wish to sell New Orleans to America, then Monroe will so report to President Jefferson on returning to Washington.
But the purchase of New Orleans would mean a great deal to your government, would it not?
It is but another port.
But a necessary one.
If New Orleans were ours, it would ease the shipping problem along the Mississippi.
Exactement. Eh bien, monsieur, I am pleased to inform you that the consul has had, a change of heart.
Oh, so?
And this change of heart affects us in some way?
Most assuredly it does. Mm. The consul has instructed me to offer your government the port of New Orleans.
Ah,
well, that is good news indeed. Does he perchance also offer us the Floridas?
Oh, oui, Monsieur Livingstone. Not only the Florida.
There is more?
There is more.
I do not understand.
Your government, it would be interested in the purchase of the territory of Louisiana.
The Louisiana territory?
Oui.
In its entirety?
Oui. The consul makes that most generous offer.
I do not understand.
We were not prepared for such an offer.
But it appeals to you, Inspector.
Indeed it does.
Eh bien, then we will discuss the terms.
Oh, we cannot act that quickly, Monsieur Talleyrand.
Pourquoi pas?
On such a proposition, we must first consult with President Jefferson before we can come to any decision.
Oh, unfortunately, Monsieur Monroe, it would take many days for you to send a message to your president, and many more for his reply to reach France. The consul will not wait. He must have your decision now.
But, Monsieur Talleyrand, in matters of such magnitude, it is the president who makes the decisions.
In other matters, perhaps. In this matter, you will have to speak in the name of your government.
We are not authorized to make such a decision.
Monsieur Talleyrand, if we should decide to accept the consul's offer, what price would he accept for it?
Oh, his price, monsieur, is most generous. For the entire territory, he asks but 25 million of your American dollars.
25?
Such a fantastic figure. Monsieur Talleyrand is hardly what one would call generous.
What would you call generous?
Well, I am certain that Monsieur Monroe and I can arrive at a figure that would be acceptable to the consul if you will give us a little time to consider the proposition.
Bien, monsieur. You shall have the time to consider.
Thank you.
However, I would suggest that you do not take too much time to make your decision. The consul is a most impatient man.
I do not understand, Livingstone. First, Bonaparte stubbornly refuses to sell us so much as New Orleans alone. Then suddenly we are offered the entire Louisiana territory. Now, what can his reason be for such a change?
Whatever his reason, Monroe, we must accept his offer.
I agree. But how? We have the authority only to bargain for New Orleans and the Floridas. And with time of the essence, further authorization is out of the question.
And we must do it without authorization. Do you realize what this territory will mean to America? Consider for a moment, Monroe. Today there are 16 United States in the Union.
Mm.
But if this vast territory west of the Mississippi were ours, how many more states might be born?
The potential value of the territory goes beyond even that. What grazing lands could be established in it? And the agricultural possibilities. This is an offer we cannot refuse. And yet, do we dare to accept it? What guarantee do we have that our decision will be the correct one? Will the people of America agree with our decision?
The answers to those questions, my friend, will come in due time. At the moment, it comes down to this. We must take it on ourselves to accept the offer and pray that the consequences are favorable.
Very well. We accept the offer.
Yes, but what of the price? Bonaparte's demand of $25 million is far in excess of what we dare offer.
And what do you suggest?
$4 million.
$4 million it shall be. But I have doubts that the fox will be that easy to catch.
Well, monsieur?
We are prepared to offer the consul $4 million for the territory.
Impossible.
Would he consider $6 million?
Oh, c'est ridicule.
But, Livingston. We have already offered 7 million.
Then let us offer 8.
It is not enough.
10 million?
12 million.
We have played the game long enough, monsieur. The council will make one last offer. The territory shall become a part of your United States for $15 million.
But that is a sum greater than the entire annual revenue of our government.
$15 million, messieurs, and your gouvernement will also assume the payment of any spoliation claims your sea captains may have against France.
The consul drives a hard bargain.
The consul also will not be cheated.
And $15 million is his final offer.
Oui, Monsieur Livingston. Eh bien, messieurs, what is your answer?
In the name of our government, we accept the offer.
Thus was consummated the biggest real estate negotiation in history. $15 million for one-third of a nation. 800,000 square miles of land, which today covers over 12 of our states, which produces annually some 3 million bales of cotton, 1.5 billion bushels of corn and wheat, and some 400 million barrels of oil and minerals, worth over $840 million. This was the Louisiana Territory, sold to us at 4 cents an acre, when Napoleon Bonaparte realized he would get nothing for it if France should lose the war with England. Truly America's greatest bargain. When President Jefferson learned of the negotiation, he was most enthusiastic in his personal approval. And when Congress gave its approval, the Louisiana Purchase became a reality. We owe a great deal to the two men who are personally responsible for the purchase of this territory, which has brought our country so much wealth. Robert Livingston and James Monroe. Two men who, with prophetic foresight, contributed so much to the way of life we enjoy today. You have been listening to Inheritance, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with the American Legion. Here is an announcement from the American Legion.
The American Legion will hold its 36th National Convention this year in Washington, D.C., from August 30th through September 2nd, when approximately 150,000 Legionnaires and 100,000 of their family members will arrive in that city for what promises to be the largest convention in the history of the nation's capital. The Legion, which celebrated its 35th birthday this year, is composed of nearly 3 million veterans of World War I, World War II, and the recent Korean conflict. Dedicated for God and country, it is an articulate force for Americanism and for the preservation of the lofty ideals and strong moral values which are our inheritance.
Next week, Inheritance will take you on another journey through the pages of history to a time when Americans dreaming of the future forged that which we possess today. Today's story, America's Greatest Bargain, was written by Milt Kahn and featured Whitfield Connor as Robert Livingston and Dennis Patrick as James Monroe. Included in the cast in order of their appearance were Clarence Strait, Gil Harmon, Ann Seton, Tyler McVeigh, Jay Barney, Ben Wright, Donald Lawton. The original music was composed and conducted by Robert Armbruster. Inheritance is produced for the National Broadcasting Company and the American Legion by Albert McCleary. This is John Wall speaking. Tonight, hear Meet the Press on the NBC Radio Network.